C2PR. Number 21B.
So, here, actually, for the first time, she comes to the point where she said, now God is going to bless it. You will get the answer. Doesn't say yet what the form of that answer will be, but it leads very wonderfully then over to the sixth prayer. So, again, let's see what we have seen in the whole fifth prayer. I think in the whole fifth prayer we have actually now always seen that she compares really the superficial kind of prayer, the common prayer, public prayer, what was that here, a torrents of word prayers, and compares it with the living, deep, felt, fundamental sense of prayer. And so we get first the general tone of the depth of life. She shows that in that depth of life that we really should see that what we have within ourselves, that will be shown forth as a result. Prayers bring the result of one's own faith. Therefore, it is a question, what is that true source from which we draw? Is that true source a belief, superficial belief, blind faith? Is it whatever it is, torrents of words or what? And so we can see that we must see that we have a very deep felt sense of prayer. How? And so she would go and say, well, first we can go through the subtones here. Say, the very first one is to have a fervent, constant desire to know the will of God. So it is not just a desire, as we had in the first prayer. Here it's life as mind. So that desire has further qualities, namely a fervent desire, and something even more than that, a constant desire. Those fervent and constant give you the tone of life. So desire is not just any more desire to know God as He is. Now it is the constant, fervent desire to know God and do the will of God, which is shown forth in itself as the willingness to sacrifice everything for it, to lay down the mortal. That gives to life the depth that you say, I don't mind to pay the price. Then, if that desire, that true fervent desire, is established within us, then we have to stand to that desire, like Jesus did with that conscientious protest of man's likeness to God and his unity with truth and love. So we give to this desire that is fervent and constant, we give to that all the substance we have. We give to that all the strength we have. All those qualities that we know as spirit, the conscientious protest. We do that, why? Because we know only if we have what we have in our consciousness, that will be shown forth. So in soul, we have the identity between the source and its effect. So the source, we know, determines the effect. So I say to myself, all right, what kind of source do I want to have? Is it just a desire? Is it just that I affirm that? What kind of a source shall I have? And she says, well, your source should be of the nature of principle. Namely, your source should be divine science. Therefore, your prayer must go out from divine science and not from a common custom of prayer. So build on science, on divine science. We say, that's fine. All right, I build on divine science. Who has access to that divine science? Has each individual access to it? So she says, yes, because all prayers are mental. She says that in order to show that it is not dependent on anything outside that divine science. Not an organization, not if you have a practitioner, not if you have a pastor that prays for you, not if you have a whole congregation that prays for you. That's absolutely out. Well, doesn't matter. I feel if I would be sick, really sick, and would let me heal by this evangelic community prayer, as I've watched them on the TV over here, I think I would get sicker. I, not the others. See, all depends on one's inner attitude. If the inner attitude is emotional, you may get healed. If the inner attitude is science, it gives you the creeps. Leonard just also mentioned this to me in this regard. He said, when the medical people from the West, so the Orthodox medical people, going to Africa to these what we call primitive tribes, they find out that they are not so primitive as we think. And they find out that mostly their medicine doesn't work, but that the medicine of the medicine man works, which we call primitive, which we call whatever we call them. Whatever it is, huh? Doesn't matter. It shows that the mentality, that every mentality demands for its own medicine, so to say, and can get the benefit from its own medicine. So those called primitive people may not be benefited by something very more sophisticated from the West, because they have not that kind of vitality. And so I think also that any kind of a religious prayer wouldn't touch me in the slightest, because my whole makeup is not that way. That's how I'm built. Therefore, she says, what she presents is a prayer of science, and that's mental. Whoever has that mentality to see in science really the answer will benefit from it. And that actually love wants us to be benefited by science and not by belief. Therefore, she goes on to truth and says, but alone to have that kind of a mental standard is not enough. You have to work for it, you have to work in it, you have to labor for the accomplishment of it. Just as she has pointed out in that article on faith cure, which I read before, that it is much simpler and easier to believe, because it does not demand any cross-bearing. It does not demand any laboring. And so, in science, we have to work for it. In belief, we don't have to work for it. So that's why most people like belief better than science. But she also brings out that only as we cherish this divine science and work along that divine science and labor along that divine science, if we cherish that desire silently, humbly, honestly, that desire mind, silently, spirit, humbly, soul, honestly, principle, that desire then really brings forth a blessing, that it is answered by God. Yes, that's the prayer of life. And again, text interpretation is what we have seen here. We have considered over a long time the prayer of life. How does it distinguish itself from all the other prayers? Is it more or less the same as what we had before? These are the questions. Always ask these questions 100 times every time. Because by distinction, we understand. There is no understanding without distinction. A subject that has no distinction within itself can never be understood, because it cannot be ordered, and therefore it cannot be understood. So the value of everything is that one sees, if I have reached a point, I begin to compare it with all the other findings. And so always ask now, is this very different from the prayer of mind? Well, the prayer of mind only just said you should have a desire. And that desire should be directed towards God and to know God as what God is. That's all. Didn't say anything about the depth of the desire, the constant desire, the fervency of that desire. It was just desire being directed to the right object, God. Then we had the prayer of spirit, which said, now what are the spiritual qualities which you can bring forth in order to reflect that God? And so we had a whole enumeration of those wonderful qualities, the spiritual qualities that we have to put into that prayer. So that prayer becomes substance, that we give to that prayer substantial qualities. They were again different. We didn't ask at that point, does that prayer bring forth a result? We didn't ask that. Nor in the first prayer. We didn't ask, does it bring forth a result? Does it work? We didn't ask that question either in the third prayer. There we just said, what have we to do that we are not sidetracked from the prayer of mind and spirit? What are the temptations that say, I like to sidetrack you? What is the devil that comes along and tempts us and say, don't go along the prayer of mind and spirit? Can you resist and rebuke all those temptations and all those suggestions that want you to sidetrack? Can you do that? Are you humble enough really to change and to be reformed so that you are not used by the attempt of sin to deviate from the rule? Are you sticking to the rule? There was no question, what is the result of it? Or we came then to principle, and again in principle, there was no question, how do we demonstrate principle? So that we have a practical effect. It was all about showing that prayer of mind, spirit and soul has to shine through every aspect of our life. That gives the prayer of honesty if every aspect of our life is in conformity with that prayer of mind, spirit and soul. That the desire and what we say are in conformity. That the inner attitude and the outer manifestations are in conformity. That we are not whited sepulchres. That what we actually are and what we pretend to be must be in conformity. That there is no discrepancy there. That really your theory and your proof is in conformity. See, there was all that sense that everything within ourselves must be in conformity to the first three prayers. So that we are a whole person, that we are an integrated person, a person of integrity, where not one aspect is fighting another aspect or is in disconformity, in disagreement with the other aspect. And only when we have done that fourth chapter of honesty, where everything within us swings and in the same harmony of being, then we came to the fifth chapter, to the fifth prayer, which had a completely different purpose again, which said, now I really want to see if this prayer is a living prayer. With a living prayer, I mean, does it actually do something? Does it actually bring about something? So we consider what cause is necessary in order to bring forth a right effect. So constantly the question of cause and effect was under consideration. That makes up here the practice of life. And so that whole fifth prayer is all about questions. What kind of a cause should we have in order to have a right effect? And so we were considering through the subtones the right cause. Yes? You see, I can't start with a new subject, so we just hang around the prayer of life a little bit. It always gives me an opportunity to bring in text interpretation hints and rules. For instance, if we feel that the main point of this fifth prayer is actually that law of cause and effect, if we feel that, then we say it's not enough to feel it. Is it actually in the text? So one thing we always have to see, that everything perhaps starts with feeling an idea, with feeling out something, always in text interpretation. Somehow we get first the feel, and we don't know yet quite if that feel is right. And therefore we always have to test that, so that to make it sure that it is actually in the text, and the constituent of the text, and not just our feeling. So don't do away with feeling, that's right, but test the feeling so that it becomes understanding. For instance, when I did this in those early days, I just have here notes from 1952. And by going through that prayer, I said, oh yes, here always the same is said about cause and effect. Is it really so? So I write out for myself, I go through the text and write out on the page the renderings of how Mrs. Eddy says it. And if that rendering is so, that it repeats itself and repeats itself, then I know I quote the right tone. Then it's no more my feeling than it is objective text interpretation in the text. So I just run quickly through what is in the text, so in order to impress you just with one thing, that it is in the text and not Max said. You know, if all can heal themselves of saying Max said, and we really achieve something. As long as it is Max said, then it is not understood. And you know how you get cornered sometimes. You go home from a summer school and you talk to your husband or to your wife or to your friend and so on, and you talk about it, and then they ask questions, and then you get cornered and they don't know the answer. And then, but Max said... All right. Now, just listen, I read rather quickly because it's not worthwhile making notes about it, but you can do it at home just to reinforce your understanding of it. That in the subtone of mind, she says, petition bring to mortals only the results of mortals' own faith. A desire for holiness is requisite in order to gain holiness. Can you hear the tone of... She doesn't say cause is this, effect is this. It's tonality. Prayer coupled with a firm and habitual desire to know and do the will of God will bring you into all truth. You get an effect. In the subtone of spirit, she says, the prayer of faith shall save the sick. The beneficial effect of such prayer is on the human mind. How? Making it act more powerfully on the body. Effect. You have in the subtone of soul, prayer to a corporeal God affects the sick as a drug. It affects the sick. You have a result or effect. Mortal belief causes a drug. Mortal belief causes, you have to cause, and it causes a drug to be the effect either poisonous or sanitative. You come to principles, uptown of principle. In common prayer, help is derived from blind belief. Here you have to take grammar and put it into the order of cause and effect, so it should read according to spiritual grammar. In common prayer, blind belief gives a help. Blind belief, cause, is helping, effect. In science, help comes from enlightened understanding. Again, you have to put it, you have put grammar into the spiritual grammar, where you would say, in science, enlightened understanding gives help. Enlightened understanding is cause, helps is the effect. I must make a mental note here afterwards. In point of life, she says, availing oneself of God, that's cause, is a very present help in trouble. Effect. Can you see constantly? Those sentences are constantly cause-effect. In truth, she says, laboring for the achievement of what we ask, our Father will reward us openly. Again, causes to labor for the achievement of what we ask, effect, the Father will reward us openly. In the subtone of love, she says, cherishing the desire honestly, silently, and humbly, that's cause, God will bless it, effect. So there are how many? 12? Sorry. Ever when I have to count in my own language. There are here 12 statements within 2 pages that say something about cause and effect. You don't have that in the other prayers. Can you see, in this way I test my findings. In this way I can achieve something which nobody understands. I'm so alone, you know. I'm actually alone spiritually. Except very good friends around me. Then I'm no more alone. But they always say, well, what Max teaches, that's nice. No, not always. But sometimes they say, that's nice. That's Max's interpretation. Saying there are lots of others on the same point. There shouldn't be. There shouldn't be. There should not be Max's interpretation. That should not exist. There should only exist one thing, principle's own interpretation in the textbook. And that text does not lend itself to any subjective interpretation. It only lends itself for a scientific text interpretation. If it wouldn't be so, why write a textbook? Why write a textbook? And you know, this is really something to say that that is Max's interpretation of the textbook. what do they then have to say about John Dawley's interpretation of the Bible? Then they must also say that John Dawley's interpretation of the Bible, meaning that he's one out of 10 million who have interpreted the Bible. And that's not true. That's just the point. That John Dawley was the first one out of those 10 millions who interpreted the Bible that said, I'm interpreting on the basis of the system and not on the basis of my inspiration. And if they accept that, they must accept the textbook's interpretation and just can't say that's an individual subjective interpretation. Why, if they attack me on that point, why don't they attack John Dawley on that point and say, well, that's John Dawley's interpretation of the Bible, but I can also give my interpretation of the Bible and can put the whole thing upside down and say that's my interpretation of the Bible. So what's the good of having had a John Dawley live on this world? There is no good for John Dawley on this world if we treat him like that. If we don't see, and they don't see it, that he was not giving his inspired interpretation. He gave principles' own interpretation. And that's where we must come to. Each one of us must see that with the Bible, but also with the textbook. So that each one can stand in the world against the whole movement and against all critics and say, I don't fear you. I can prove it through the text. Then we are safe. From that point on, we are safe. From that point on, we can teach the textbook. You see? So, this is a big point to bring out of. What did I said I must make a mental note. Oh, yes. At that point when I was telling about cause and effect in the text, I said, well, we have to change the English grammar, or the English syntax, actually, into the spiritual syntax. See, that's another point in interpretation, text interpretation, to see that English syntax does not follow the spiritual syntax, therefore does not follow the spiritual logic. We had here, we said, in common prayer, help is derived from blind belief. So in the syntax of English language, you first have help, which is the effect, is derived from blind belief, the cause. So the English grammar can do that, and it's a good grammar. Human grammar, whatever it is, it's German or what Chinese, does not obey spiritual logic. See, you must at once translate it into spiritual logic. You read a thing like that, your spiritual logic always says you reason from cause to effect. In the science of mind, we start with mind, and we have to reason from cause to effect, and not from effect to cause. So that in our consciousness, we are following the spiritual order of saying, well, in common prayer it is so that from blind belief comes no help. And it is spiritual order. Then grammar would be congruent with English syntax. And that you have to watch quite often, so that you always take what is stated in English and put it first into the order of the spirit. And then it makes better sense.